Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank, and we're talking right now with Steve Bucci, director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Now, Steve, obviously there are so many flare-ups around the globe right now that some things that absolutely shouldn't be ignored aren't getting the coverage they need, and one of those is the attacks on Palm Sunday against Egyptian Coptic Christians. A couple of horrifying suicide bombings and dozens of people killed, hundreds wounded. Give us a little bit of the background around that.
Well, you know, ISIS is very active now within Egypt. That's one of the places they flared up after they started getting more and more pressure in Syria and Iraq. And President al-Sisi he's trying to fight them. I mean, he sees it as a individual national interest, but he also sees it as a wider one, and we're still a little slow in getting them some help. But this attack this weekend shows ISIS is deliberately targeting Christian Arabs and around the world, and really to devastating effect.
Now, President al-Sisi was just here, met with President Trump. They discussed a lot of things. One thing that was not discussed, or at least mentioned particularly prominently, was the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, al-Sisi came into power by deposing the Brotherhood and pointing out that they have, in his country for certain, not stopped their terrorist tendencies. Do you think that they are complicit with ISIS, or is it even possible that ISIS was operating without their knowledge or consent?
Well, I mean, President al-Sisi has really kind of put a hurt on the Brotherhood there in Egypt, fortunately for the Egyptian people. So I'm not sure how much they're helping ISIS, but they're definitely fellow travelers. They have similar ideologies. They really don't like the direction that of democratization that Egypt is at least trying to take some nascent steps. They loved using democracy to get into power, but then as soon as they got in there, they were going to throw the whole thing in the can and pursue their own ends. So there's probably at least an sort of fellow traveler kind of connection. I don't know if they're operating together or not, but it's something worth looking into.
Yeah, those two making common cause would be a headache al-Sisi doesn't need and the world doesn't need. That's bad for everyone and horrible for the Christians who are being persecuted and killed there and elsewhere by ISIS and the rest of the Islamists. Steve, let's jump to Syria, where they've actually run most of the Christians out, and talk about the chemical attacks and President Trump's response to those. Which it seems he gave a warning to the Russians and Syrians, I think wisely, to avoid potentially broadening the conflict and including the Russians. But do you think that we're now in a more aggressive, antagonistic posture towards the Russians, given their apparent either complicity or blind eye they turned to this?
Well, I think at the very least, President Trump has sent a very strong message, not just to Bashar al-Assad, but to Vladimir Putin, to even Kim Jong-un and the Ayatollahs in Tehran, that, hey, I'm not Barack Obama. And if you guys go beyond the pale, I'm going to take some action. Now, there's a lot of debate as to whether the action was the right one, should have been bigger, should have been less. But he is not going to sit on his hands and wait for permission from somebody like Russia before he takes action in a place like Syria. So while I'm the jury's still out on the effectiveness of the move and from a tactical sense in Syria, from a messaging standpoint, it was powerful and I think will have some good effect.
Yeah, in the opening segment of the show, I mentioned the French Foreign Legion has a phrase they use when trying to influence people called pour encourager les autres, to encourage the others. So when you stomp a mud hole in someone like Assad, the rest of them have to pay attention and wonder You know, am I next? What is it? You know, where is the red line? Because there obviously is one now, as opposed to an imaginary one during the Obama administration. So now we're, you mentioned though, the, okay, did it work or did it not? Let's dig a little bit into what happens in both Syria and Iraq, because we're nearing, if not an end game, at least we should be planning for next steps if the caliphate is toppled. If we cut down the black flag in Iraq and Syria and ISIS isn't running things, who can? You know, the Iranians seem to be highly influencing the Iraqi government. The Syrians are a puppet regime that doesn't even control their own country. Who can run any of that if we manage to knock ISIS off its perch?
That's the problem. You know, if ISIS goes, it's less of an issue because you have theoretically two governments there that supposedly will fill that gap. Unfortunately, there one is a bad government in Syria, and the other one is a weak and badly influenced government in Iraq. To be honest with you, one of the bigger problems is what happens if you get rid of Assad, who needs to go. He's a horrendous dictator and just terrible person. But if he goes, who wins the Syrian civil war part two? Right now, it could be ISIS. It could be Al-Qaeda. It could be the Muslim Brotherhood. This is there's not a lot of really good options there. And that's the difficult part that the Trump administration needs to work out and come to a conclusion as to where they want to go, not just let it go to chance the way the Obama administration did.
Yeah, we can't sit on the sidelines. Okay, I will throw you my cunning plan for this, which we actually wrote almost a year and a half ago in the book, Cut Down the Black Flag. And it ended in essentially a partition along sectarian lines. You know, the countries of Syria and Iraq are artificial. They were drawn on a map in post-colonial times or in the colonial breakup. So there's no coherence to it other than, you know, the fact that they've been there. You've got Shia, who are now increasing, you know, in Iraq around Baghdad and farther, who are increasingly allied with Iran. You've got the Sunni tribes from Anbar into Syria, which now have been, you know, more or less dominated and oppressed by ISIS, but if at some point are going to leave there. And we at one point had fairly cordial relations with the Sunni tribal leaders. I don't know if any of them are still alive, but some potentially. And then you've got over towards the coast in Syria, you've got Assad and his minorities, you know, the Alawites and the other minorities over there. Why in the world don't we tell the UN, let's redraw the map and give self-determination to these and throw it in their lap?
I'm not real thrilled about throwing anything in the UN's lap because I don't think they're competent to deal with it, nor would they necessarily come up with a solution that we'd be thrilled with. They tend to flow with some of the folks that we dislike the most.
That's true.
But you're right from the standpoint of we've got to look out of the box. We've got to look for a different kind of solution because looking at the standard ones, the return to the status quo just is unsat right now. It's not going to work, and we need to start thinking that way. You know, John Kerry was abysmal at doing this. His lack of imagination and lack of spine was just legion. And now with Secretary of State Tillerson, Secretary of Defense Mattis, and President Trump, I think we got a team in there that could actually come up with some good solutions. Some of the stuff you talked about, I think, is going to end up being a part of it, which means there's going to be people that are going to be unhappy. But right now, we need to look for our national interests and the security of our friends in the region, because right now it's just too volatile. And there's people suffering because of a lack of decision making on the part of the countries who have the ability to influence it.
That's a fact. Steve Bucci, director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Thanks for being with us. This is Jim Hansen, and that is going to wrap up Secure Freedom Radio for today. We'll be back tomorrow with more ammunition for you in the war for the free world.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.